Okay, so the we were discussing the Gemara on Daf Gimel Amud Beis. Two aspects of the Gemara. Number one, the Gemara discusses the requirement of a Bezdin Noteh, namely that you need an odd numbered Bezdin. The Gemara seems to link that to the pasuk Acher Rabim Lahatos, which we read in Parsha, and you know that you need a Bezdin Noteh. The Gemara debates. The Gemara has this in the context of the debate of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Yonasan. How we know three Dayanim? Do we have three Elohims, right? The word Elohim three times, or do we have the word Elohim twice? And we have this rule of Ein Bezdin Noteh. So the Gemara originally thought that Rabbi Yoshua, who requires three Elohims, doesn't believe in the concept of Bezdin Noteh. And since he doesn't believe in Bezdin Noteh, he needs all three Dayanim. So then the Gemara, in the end of the Gemara discusses back and forth, maybe to distinguish between different Batei Dinim, what about a Bezdin Shel Shivim, what about a Bezdin Shel Chaf Gimel, and so on. We discussed all of those permutations. But the bigger point is that the Gemara says that if the only Bezdin that requires a Bezdin Noteh, according to Rabbi Yoshua, is a Bezdin of Dinei Nefashos, so how do we even know that Acharei Rabim Lahatos applies to a Sanhedrin? After all, that's all from the same Pasuk, and maybe the connection is even stronger. So how would we know that if you have three Dayanim and two say Zakai and one says Chayiv, or two say Chayiv and one says Zakai, how would we even know that we go by the majority? Maybe you really need a unanimous decision of the three Dayanim. After all, the Pasuk, which is the source of this din, is written by Dinei Nefashos, and according to Rabbi Yoshua, the dinim of Dinei Nefashos, when it comes to those broader issues of configuration, are not necessarily identical to that of Dinei Mamet. That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, at the end of this Shakla Vitaria, here on the towards the bottom of Gimel on the base, the Gemara says, Afilu Tem Rabbi Yoshua, Maisa Lo B'Kav HaChomer. Zil Basar Ruba, I'm sorry, So the answer is that we learn a kavachomer from Dinei Nefashos. Dinei Nefashos, we go by majority rule, even though the stakes in Dinei Nefashos are considerably greater, right? It's irreversible, it's a man's life, and so on and so forth. So obviously, it doesn't make sense to say that you require a unanimous decision of Dayanim and Dinei Mamonis. That's the Gemara's conclusion. So, but Pashtus, the Gemara's conclusion is limited to the din of Acher Rabim Lahatos. In other words, the simple reading of the Gemara, and the way that I'm sure most of the Rishonim read, almost all the Rishonim read, was that Rabbi Yoshua remains adamant that the only Bezdin that requires an odd number per se is the Bezdin of Dinei Nefashos. However, if you want to ask, how do we know that, you know, you need that a majority also works in Dinei Mamonis, the answer is Kavachomer Medinei Nefashos. However, as we saw, Rabbeinu Chananel seems to have a different read of the Gemara. Rabbeinu Chananel says, if in the Maskana the Gemara concludes that in Dinei Mamonis there is a din of Acharei Rabim Lahatos, so then probably Rabbi Yoshua also changed his mind or felt that this was an indication that even in Dinei Mamonis is a requirement of Bezdin Noteh. So at the end of the day, this raises an interesting question about the connection between Acher Rabim Lahatos and Bezdin Noteh. According to Rabbeinu Chananel, you can't have one without having the other. And the question is, why? How do we understand that? That's question number one. Point number two was, we then read the Gemara, the discussion between Rebbe and the Chachamim, where the Gemara said, Tan Rabbanan Dini Mamonis Bishlosha, Rebbe Omer B'Chamisha, Kedeshi Yigmar Adin Bishlosha. So the Gemara says that you need, according to Rebbe, you need five Dayanim, so that you can have a Gemar Din based on the majority of three. So the Gemara says, Atu betlasa milo gamar dina? What do you mean you need five so you can have three? Have three, and then you'll be gomar din betray. Have three so you can have two. So the Gemara says, Hachi kamar, nipnesha gamar din bishlosha, right? Meaning, if the Torah says you need three Dayanim, who are those three Dayanim? Are they the ones that make the decision? Or are they the ones who sit on the case and, you know, engage in the process? So the Gemara originally thought, or at least the Gemara thinks, according to Rabbi, that really the Gimel Dayanim are the deciding the decisive judges. Alma Kesavar Klasa Kiksivi Bigmardin Bigmardina Ksivi. So the Gemara says Megadif Ba Rabavo Elamiata Teisan Henry Gedol Tzricha Mea the Arba'im Viachad. If that's true, then you should require 141 for Bezna Gadol. Why? Kadeshi Gmaradin B'Shivim Viachad. So that way you'll arrive at a 71. Dayanim. Conclusion. Uteisan Henry Katana Tzricha. Arba'im v'chamisha, 45, Kadesh Yigmaradin, v'shlosha v'yesrim, Ella, what do we say? Esfali shivimi, shamrachmana v'shas asifa, shivim, meaning we don't gauge 70 by the deciding winning judges, we determine the 70 by the people who gather together to deliberate, to engage in the process, right? V'shafto edim etzileidu nami, mishas shvita sa'edim. And the same is true when it comes to Bezin of 23, right? It's determined by the people, by the Dayanim who put their heads together, not by the Dayanim who necessarily vote on the winning side. So Hachanami v'nikra balabai sanu alahim ishas kreva shlosha. So too, dinim ominous, the number is determined, meaning the three, relates not to the Gemar din, but to the Tchilas din. Ela, but if that's the case, so what's going on? What's the purpose of Rebbe's din? Where do you get five? Hayne tam de Rebbe, a different reason. Asher yashiun Elohim, that's plural, trey. Ne'amar Elohim lemata, ne'amar Elohim lemala. The word Elohim appears twice, so we double that. Malamata shtayim af lemala shtayim. Ein bezin shakum, mosif alayim, od echad arekan cha misha. There are five. The Rabbanan, yashiun ksiv. It's a kri and a ksiv. Meaning the kri is yashiun, plural, and the ksiv is yashian, not plural, without the vav. Okay, that's the shak v'tari of the Gemara. But the discussion of the Gemara can be understood in one of two ways. One is that the Gemara is talking about a kind of more technical question, and that is whether the number of dayanim relates to the Gemar din or to the asifas hadayanim, the tchilas hadin. In other words, if I tell you that there's X amount of dayanim required, and that there are one, two, three, whatever it is, phases in din, so it's an open question whether or not the number refer to all three, or to one of the three, and then the question is which one of the three. So that's a very, looking at it from that perspective, that's, I guess, an innocuous way to understand the Shaka Vitaria of the Gemara. However, it seems more appealing to suggest that the debate is not arbitrary. It's not a question of, Tchilas Adin, Maso Matan, Gmar Din, which of these dictates or determines the number of Dayanim. It seems that more is going on than that. What it seems is happening is that there's a discussion about the very nature of Din, how a Bez Din works. Originally, the Gemara thought that everything depends on the Gmar Din. Originally, the Gemara thought that everything depends on Gemar Din, because the Gemara was taking a very pragmatic view of how Din works. And they were basically suggesting there's a number of individual Dayanim, and it's the winning Dayanim that decide the case. So if there are supposed to be three Dayanim, then obviously you need five so that you have a majority of at least three. Then the question is, so what's the maskana sagamara? That it depends on shas asifa. So you could say, well, the three is just a hekatimsi, all we really care about are two dayanim. But the two who are gomer sadin are still the dayanim who matter. They're still the dayanim who are winning the case. Or you might reorient yourself completely and suggest that a Bez Din is not composed of individual Dayanim, but it is a process and it's an integrated body. In other words, it's a group that comes together to assess a Din, right? And the consensus that emerges from that group is precisely what we have in producing the maskana. The maskana is not produced by the winning judges, It's produced by the entire process from beginning to end, and therefore the number of Dayanim is determined by the beginning, and we don't look at it in terms of winning and losing Dayanim, at least not mostly. We'll see, it gets a little more complicated. Oh. So this idea is a very, very critical issue in Dayanus, and perhaps it's also relevant to what we were discussing before. Because before we were discussing why it is that according to Rabbeinu Hananel, there seems to be a link, a very strong link, between Achrei Rabim Lahatos and the requirement of a Bezdin Nota. So maybe, as we'll explain in just a minute, maybe the very notion of Achrei Rabim Lahatos itself is contingent upon the notion of Bezdin as a unit and the consensus that emerges from that unit. We'll explain why that should be so in just a second. And if that's the case, then maybe we can explain that is the link to Bezdin Nota. You need an oddly configured number of Dayanim because you want to build in, again, it's not infallible. You can always have Dayanim saying any Odeya. We know that there are holes. But at least structurally, likely, what you're doing is you're building in a certain integrated unity and independence into this group. And maybe that's exactly the kesher, according to Rabbeinu Hananel. So why do I say that itself is connected to the conclusion of Achrei Rabim Lahatos? For the following other reason. We have two Tosafim. This is what we were discussing at the very, very end of last year. We have two Tosafim, one in Bava Kamma, one in Sanhedrin, that ask the exact same question, and that seem to give opposite answers. Each of these opposite answers is intriguing and requires a better explanation or understanding. Okay, so what is that? Look here at Tosas. Dine Maminis Lokoshike. So Tosas, we'll start with Tosas Sanhedrin. Tosas Tema. Liberation Mokar Peros, Kamar Shmuel, Eno Kumbamamon, Achar, Harov. Yamai, Lonev Bakavachomer, Medine Nefashos, Kedomer Hacha. The question is simple. In Bava Kamma and in Bava Basra, there are several Gemaras where the Gemara basically says that when it comes to a matter of Dine Maminis, we have a principle of Motzi Mechavero Olav Haraya, meaning the burden of evidence is always to demonstrate that somebody owes money. The status quo prevails until you can prove otherwise. And therefore, the rule is that Ein Hochem B'Mamon Acharot. Even if you have a probability, a majority, right, we still say, you know what, that's not a strong enough evidence. Motzi mechavero olav harai. There's always a minority in every majority. Motzi mechavero olav harai still applies. That's what the Gemara seems to say, both in Bava Kamma and in Bava Basra. The Gemara there talks about, for example, a case where the person sold an animal, an ox. The ox turned out to be unfit for labor. And the Gemara wants to know, you know, whether or not it's a mekachtos, whether the sale falls apart because it was, you know, the pretext was false. And the question is, well, when most people acquire an ox, are they acquiring it for labor or are they acquiring it for supper? Right? So the Gemara says, well, there's a rove. And the Gemara basically says, don't tell me about the rove, because ein hochem b'mamon acharov. If you want to, you know, be motzi mamon from this mocher by claiming that he defrauded you, right? It's not enough to say rove. You have to prove more than that. That's the Gemara in those places. There are similar Gemaras. So the question is, if you say ein hochem b'mamon acharov, so how come here, when it comes to Sanhedrin, we say that we derive dine maminis from dine nefashos, and that dayanim, who you know, vote two against one, in one way or another, are decisive. Why don't you say, this is a monetary case, there's a taveya and a nitva, right? There's a defendant. The defendant should be protected, right, by the rule of ein hochem b'mamon acharov, or motzi mechavero olav haraya. And therefore, even if you have two dayanim, you know, since there's a miut, and we're not really sure, there are legitimate people voicing the other side of this case, so on what basis do we say Hochem Mamon Acharov? That's the question. So Tosas asks this question here in Sanhedrin and also in Bava Kamma. And as I say, Tosfos comes to two opposite conclusions. Tosfos here basically says that the Gemara, our Gemara here in Sanhedrin, is the rule, and the Gemara in Bava Basra and Bava Kamma, Ein Hochem B'Mamon Achar Rov, that Rov is ineffective, that is the exception. Why? So Tosfos explains. First, Tosfos tries to say, maybe there's a distinction. Ein Lomar D'Dinei Nefashos Gufayu Lo Azinim Basar Ruba Beruba D'Lei Sekamon Ela Beruba D'Lei Sekamon D'Abreish Ben Sora Mora Mashma D'B'Chol D'Chta Azinim Basar Ruba B'Dinei Nefashos Gam Rav Nashim L'Tes Yeladon Ruba D'Din Shitobi Bur D'Yarcha, etc. Tosfos initially wants to say that maybe there's a difference between the two roves, in that the Ruba of Bava Kamma and Bava Basra is a Ruba Delesa Kaman, meaning it's a global probability, but it's not staring you in the face. I mean, you have one incident. You have Ruvain, who sold a cow to Shimon, and the question is it likely that Shimon bought this cow? Is the default that Shimon bought this cow for work purposes or for, you know, nutritional reasons? Right? All you have is this one cow and this one circumstance. So there you're trying to invoke a rove which is not present in the room, right? But is part of a bigger, you know, a bigger pool. However, in the Sugya in Sanhedrin, we're dealing with Dayanim, all of whom are present and in the room. So you have two say one way and one say the other. That's a Ruba D'Isa Kaman. Here the numbers, the probability, isn't just projected, right? It's not just, you know, according to the global or some other larger but unpresent pattern. It's really an actual rove that's standing right in front of us. So that's what the Gemara originally thought. Maybe distinguish between Ruba D'Isa Kaman and Ruba D'Isa Kaman, even though I should mention that from a, you know, mathematical point of view, in terms of probability, right, that too, not very logical. In other words, no one is saying that Ruba D'Isa Kaman is more, you know, compelling mathematically than Ruba D'Leisa Kaman. It's irrelevant, right? The question is whether the rove is staring us in the face, or it's part of a global rove. The global rove may be equal or stronger than the rove which is looking you in the eye. So the issue is not the numbers. Apparently, the idea would be that there's some sort of a formal difference between Ruba D'Isa Kaman and Ruba D'Leisa Kaman. Because there's another element of doubt here, and that is, who knows that this even complies or coheres with the regular rove? Oh. And maybe because of that, it's more of an arbitrary rather than a more comforting, you know, projection, you know, of solving the problem. Okay. We'll get back to that. But either way, the Gemara says it doesn't work. Because in the cases where Rov is effective, for example, Dinei Nefashos, many of those are Ruba D'Leisa Kamans too. Right? For example, Rov Nashim, you know, Yeladon, they give birth in the ninth month, not in the seventh month. Right? That's not a Ruba D'Isa Kaman, it's a Ruba D'Leisa Kaman. Most people are not careful to know Bi'ibura D'Yarcha. You know, they'll mix up, you know, whether it's the second day of the month or the third day of the month, because they're not sure, they don't always find out, you know, when Rosh Chodesh really is. That's a Ruba D'Leisa Kaman. So when it comes to matters of Dinei Nefashos, we're operating with those roves, even though they're Ruba D'Leisa Kaman. So obviously that's not, you know, we tried to isolate the factor, and it just, you know, doesn't work.
Ah. Isn't anyone bothered by, you know, question of why would you assume that a rove involving facts of the case is at all related to rove regarding a decision process?
So we'll get to that in just a second. Maybe that's what the ultimate answer is. So let's see that 100%. So the Gemara the Tosfos finally says, "Vitzarach lomar deruba l'radya zavni lo chashuv ki hanach ruba." It's pretty vague, but basically what Tosfos is saying is has nothing to do with Isa Leisa Kaman, but that Ruba in Bava Kamma and Bava Basra is Aruba Delo Chashiv, where the rove here is Chashiv. And that could be for exactly the reasons that you're talking about, right? In the case of the Sanhedrin, we're talking about reasoned arguments, and therefore the 2 over the 3 isn't just a practical number, but it's rooted in common sense. Or is it more likely, unless you're a contrarian, so then you always think that, you know, the miut makes more sense. But, you know, obviously, when you have reasonable people on a similar, you know, level, you know, there'll be exceptions, but usually the majority will get it right. So I think that exactly may be what Tosis is saying. The Shev Shmeitz, I think I mentioned last time, has a slightly different take, but maybe that's exactly what he's saying too. It's hard to know. He emphasizes not so much that this rove is good because, you know, you've increased the likelihood of it being more compelling, right? Because it's a logical conclusion. More people who accept a certain logical conclusion, probably the more convincing it is. But he emphasizes instead the opposite, and that is the fact that Ruba, why people buy animals, or in the case of Bava Kamma, the question, you know, what you call a kora, what you call a chavis, rather, what you call a kad, those are conventional roves. Meaning, in a given society, this is what people happen to do. But it's not a natural rove. That's a slightly different distinction, but it's parallel to the one that we're talking about. That's how the Shev Shmeitza reads this particular tosis. Now, at the end of the day, whether we're talking about, you know, the logic of Dayanim coming to a conclusion, or the arbitrary nature of what you call a kad and a chavis and a, you know, why people, you know, happen to acquire oxen, the same point that I made before should be reiterated. Namely, none of this has to do with numbers. Right? In other words, the rove in Bava Kamma and Bava Basra may be identical, might even be slightly better, you know, than the rove, you know, of Sanhedrin. But in the end of the day, that's irrelevant. Because there's a certain formal question here, and that formal question is, to what extent do we really project that while it's not infallible, this is a likely solution, right? It's a likely reconstruction of what it is that took place, as opposed to saying, you know what, this is an arbitrary solution, we want to avoid paralysis, it's arbitrary based on, you know, a larger probability, but we're not making any kind of projection that larger probability, you know, really solves this case. We just know that it would solve, you know, the majority of cases, and there's a little comfort in that. But if you ask me in the end of the day, just to make it clearer, does there remain a suffix? Do we halachically look at this as a suffix, even as we resolve it with a rove? Or do we think that the resolution of rove solves the suffix as long as we don't know to the contrary, right, that you know, that we misfire? That's a very important debate, and it's all over the place. Again, you know, I think I mentioned it last time, we've mentioned it in the past, the question of, you know, Efshel Lebarer, Tzorach Lebarer, Dover Sheishlo, Matirin. These are some of the issues, you know, that are linked to this. Efshel Lebarer, Tzorach Lebarer means, let's say you have a rove, and you could clarify, you know, 100%. You have a right to rely on the majority rather than clarifying. Let's say, for example, most people pick up a shechita knife, you know, are not going to do that unless they're qualified, and they are qualified halachically and also physically. But, okay, let's say that's true for 65% or 72% or whatever amount of percent, right, 85%. But you can always, you know, find out. Give him a bechina. Watch him do shechita. Do you need to do that? Efshel levarer. Tzorach levarer? Oh, ain't tzorach levarer. So the more you think that you've really solved this puzzle and you're comfortable with the answer based on rove, the more there's no additional requirement, even if it's possible, to to be mavara. However, if you really think that you haven't solved the case in front of us, we've just picked a solution that works in more cases than not, but it remains a safek in the particular case, then you certainly should be saying that a mefshel lavar is tzarich lavar. And the same is true about things like dov sheish lo matir. Dov sheish lo matir means that you have a situation where you have a safek, a doubt, and if you wait it out, meaning if you wait till after Shabbos, it's a safek muktzah. If you wait till after Shabbos, there's no longer any muktzah. So do you need to apply rov, and eat or use this object on Shabbos? Why not just play it safe, wait till after Shabbos, and then you won't have a safek? That's called davar sheyesh lo matirin, if there's a heter on the horizon, right? Afilu be'elef lo batel. Even if there's 1,000-1 odds, you shouldn't employ that, because right, it's still a safek, and if you can avoid safek, you should. That's the principle of davar sheyesh lo matirin. So there's a debate, what about davar sheyesh lo matirin in certain circles? Again, we say afilu be'elef lo batel, that sounds like a pretty big number. But let's say it wasn't just the number, let's say it was how compelling, or how natural the robe was. Or we discuss it a lot in terms of things like sveksveka, where you have a double safek, or chazaka. So the point is that...
Excuse me, the number LF is meant literally, or it's just...
Well, I mean, it's a melitza.
An arbitrarily large number.
It's a large number, but...
It could be 1 in a million.
In theory.
1 in a million.
Right. The post-game debate, like how far... Would it be anything that isn't 100%, or would it be...
That's
you know, but 1,001 is already very big. That's on any scale, that's not much of a beat. So... I'm not sure how much benefit you get from going from 1,000 to 1,000,000, but I hear it. I guess for lottery purposes.
In a hospital. Like
what?
In a hospital.
What do you mean in a hospital?
1 in 1,000 would not be considered an acceptable.
Oh really?
To a patient's life.
I hear that.
Maybe I'm not a doctor.
Right.
But
right. No. I hear that. Thankfully.
Would be an acceptable.
Right. Okay. I hear that. So, anyways, that's one approach, and that's others have different explanations as to what Tosis has in mind, because it's a little bit vague, as you can see, but this is where it's going. The same question is asked by Tosis in Bava Kamma, and a different answer is given. This is the last piece in the Makoros that we have. Tosis Masechet Bava Kamma, Chav Zayin Amud Beis. Everybody have it? Right? The Dirmaso Kamash Malon. Kamash Malon, Ein Ochem B'mamon, Achar a robe. Everybody with me? Okay. Tema. Same question. Matam ein holchen. Lacy b'kav v'chomer b'dinei nefashos. Why do we say that you don't use the robe when it comes to dinei mamonis? After all, even in the more chomer dinei nefashos, we do apply the principle of robe. Probability. Can I mean a pair of commonest on Edrin? Rabbi Yoshe, ma'isla b'kav v'chomer b'dinei nefashos. Ma dinei nefashos nechamir amrachman zulbasa ruba. Meaning, we see from our Gemara that even in Dinei Nefashos we apply Rov, and we apply that then to Dinei Mamonis in Dayanim. And again, this is Tosa's way of saying, don't think that the distinction here is between Ruba de Isa and Ruba de Leisa Kaman, because we know that in Dinei Nefashos we apply the rule of Rov even to Ruba de Leisa Kaman, as we know, Kedama Bereish Sorer Umore, with regard to most women giving birth in the 9th month, and so on, and the problem of Ibur, the Arch, the same things that Tosis is talking about here. Okay, so we would have expected that Tosis' answer in Bava Kamma would be the same as our answer in Sanhedrin, but in fact, the direction is exactly the opposite. Instead of saying that Sanhedrin is the rule, and that Bava Kamma and Bava Basra are the exception. Because remember, that's what Tosis and Sanhedrin are saying, right? So when we say, well, there's a rule, Ein Hochem Amin Acharo, Tosis is really telling us in Sanhedrin, there's no such rule. That's really an exception, not a rule. It sounds like a rule, right? But it's really an exception. But Tosis in Bava Kamma, maybe it's not a coincidence, it's hard to know these things, but Tosis in Sanhedrin is assuming Sanhedrin is the real Gemara, and the Bava Kamma and Bava Basra are the exception. Tosin Bava Kamma and Bava Basra is giving you the perspective that there really is such a rule, And that's the default. Ein hochem b'mamanach harov. But the rove of Sanhedrin is different. But why is it different? So here Tosa says the following. Yishlomar, the hasam gabe dayanim shaini, the chashiv miyutud hu kimi she'eino, the minority exception in judges is considered non-existent. As if it doesn't exist. You have to explain what that means. And therefore, since the miyut is command alesa, that's why we go by the rove. We don't go by the rove because of motu nechavera olav araya when there's a miyut. But when legally there's no miyut, legally, because in fact there is a miyut, there's a judge who disputes. Are there three judges? And one says, I think they got the psak wrong. But that judge is command alesa. We discount him. We'll explain why in a second, or different ways why. And therefore, since we don't recognize legally, formally, that miut, so the rule is that rove will be affected. The lake of Lameimar Hasam, and you can't say there, Uki Mamona Bechaskas Mare. Tosis keeps talking, right? Therefore, you don't say the rule of Motzim Mechamel of Araya, or Uki Mamona, keep the money Bechaskas Mare in the possession of the owner. Habezdin Mafkimine, because it's a bezin and they're confiscating it from him. Avagabi Sharmamon Dika Miut Vakazaka. But in other cases where there is a miut and there's a kazaka, lo azina basaruba. So Tos says a few things here. He says that the miut is command alesa, and he says also that there's no uki mimani cheskasmare, because bezdin is mafki mine. So there's a big debate again among the achronim how to read this Tosis. What is so exceptionable about Ayam? There are those who interpreted that we should really emphasize the second part and not the first. The second part is what drives the first. What Tosis is saying is there's no miut here. You know why there's no miut? Not that there's no miut. The miut is inconsequential because the problem of miut is uki mamona becheskas mare, meaning motzim becheberu olav araya. And that's not going to be a problem in Dayanim, because Dayanim, in addition to their adjudicating capacity, their decision-making capacity, they have another element, and that is their bezdin, and therefore they have the power of confiscation, right? Hefker bezdin hefker. So since they have the power of hefker bezdin, in a way that neutralizes the motzi mechaber, where you say, oh, you can't take money from him without you, the burden of proof is on you. Well, that's true. If you're talking about Reuven and Shimon, but if you're talking about Bezdin, they can confiscate anybody's money. Right? So therefore, Motzim Mechaber Olav Araya is not a factor. Eliminating that, Hochem B'mamon Acharo. That's how some of the Achronim read the Gemara. Of course, there's a little bit of an issue and a problem, and that is it's one thing to say that Bezdin can apply the Din of Efker, Bezdin Hefker, when they choose to, and when they do it consciously. Now, if Bezdin makes a conscious decision that, you know, they're going to confiscate somebody's property or money, they, in Jewish law, they have the right to do that. But in the context of rendering a halachic decision and arguing about it, the idea that there's an implicit hefker bezdin as a backup, that's not obvious. I'm sorry?
You know, no, I'm saying that the bezdin says a priori that they're going to follow with the burden of proof lies.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So Tosis is saying it, fine, implicit is a backup of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. And I'm saying, as long as it's not explicit, I'm not so sure that it's implicit. Because like you say, they're really, their effort is directed towards, you know, resolving the case on the merits. You know, not exercising their judiciary confiscation powers. So I don't think this is so obvious at all. Okay. There are those who interpreted the opposite way. That they're really, the focus is the first point, and then what Tosa is saying in the second point is merely, there's no problem motzi mechaber olav araya because there's no miyud. Right? We've discounted the miyud. Once we've discounted the miyud, then bezin can do what they want. Not hefker bezin hefker, but they can be motzi mamom because there's no miyud to oppose them. But why is there no miyud to oppose them? So there are numerous, again, explanations of this. Let me mention three, or really, two. One, we'll split into two. two really interesting ones. So the Tumim, Rav Yonasan Eibshitz, right? I'm sure that at one point you've given me, I recall you've given me things to read, you know, from the Sefer. I have to do tshuva because I didn't bring back. What? Yeah. So Rav Yonasan Eibshitz in his famous Sefer, Urim Tumim, has the following interesting suggestion. He says what maybe what Tosis means is as follows. Usually, a rov and a miut are not mutually exclusive. There's a larger population, right? The set, you know. And for example, take rov nashim misyaldos letisha, right? But 20%, 15%, I don't know the numbers. Some percent give birth 7 months or earlier, right? They're not mutually exclusive, right? Similarly, if rov anashim toy be bura diarcha and miu do not, there's no contradiction in that, right? However, in the case of the dayanim, they're dealing with a single set of facts and a single set of laws, and they're coming to opposite conclusions, right? Whatever we want to say about Eilu Ve'ilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, which is an interesting, element in all this, but it's irrelevant to what we're talking about at the moment. In terms of Mishpat Achadiyah Lachem, like a single legal conclusion, you have the same facts, the same information, right? The same rules. The difference between the Dayanim, who are in the majority and the minority, is fundamentally mutually exclusive. Right? So it's, of course, a very interesting question to raise. What is the relationship between a miut, where there is mutual exclusivity relative to the rov, and where there's not? Interesting question. You could have said one of three things, right? You could have said it doesn't make a difference. A rove is a rove and a miut's a miut, and whether it's mutually exclusive or they are compatible or can exist at the same time is irrelevant. Or you could have said it matters a lot. But once you say it matters a lot, you can still go in opposite directions. You could say, well, a miut, which contradicts the rove, is an even greater threat to the rove, and is a more glaring, challenge to the rove, right? And in that case, it's a more prominent miut. Or you could say, because there is no mutual exclusivity, the only way for the rove to exist is if it completely negates the miut. The coexistence of the two is fundamentally unacceptable, and therefore the rove, which is the stronger, right, neutralizes or nullifies the miut. So the Tumim says, this doesn't go through the whole analysis, but he basically says that's the pshat of Tosas. That's what Tosas means. Shiny miut didhu, when it comes to Dayanim, kimi she'eno, because they're mutually exclusive, they're fighting, about the same din Torah, the same laws, the same facts, and one is right and the other, or two are right and one is wrong. Therefore, the miut is kimi she'eno. But that's not true when it comes to, 60% of the population, when they sell oxen for food and 40% for work or vice versa, there's no mutual exclusivity there. There's yesh v'yesh in society, as we discussed with regard to the other things. So here there's no miud, and therefore there's no such issue. According to this, this law, this rule, wouldn't apply only to Dayanim, because it isn't Dayanim per se. It's any situation where you have, right, a mutually exclusive relationship between a rov and a miut. So, for example, take another very close to Beis Din situation that the Kuntras HaSvekos and other poskim discuss. We know that there's a rule in the halacha, a very interesting rule, that just like we say Motzei Mechaver Lavaraya, let's say the fellow says, Kimli Kedas you know, Tzidkasiyachid Shabiposki. That's, you know, I know there's a debate about, you know, what should happen here, right, with my money, but I'm a Rav Elyashiv person. I'm Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach person. I'm a Rav Soloveitchik person, right? So even though we don't pass in that way, let's say, according to the Rove, but Kimli Kedas Yachid. I know that they're right. And therefore I'm not giving up my money. Can you say that or not? So it's very fascinating anyway. Can you say that? You know, what are the conditions that you can say it? If you can say it, is it the same as a debate between Dayanim? So the Kuntras HaSfekos has a big piece on this, as do others. Well, first of all, there's an issue of, you know, how idiosyncratic can it be that you can still say Kimli, you know, if you could say Kimli. In other words, let's say you have numbers, let's say, you know, one posek in 1,000, one posek in 10, you know, what are we talking about? Moreover, what about the stature, you know, of the poskim involved? In other words, anybody who says, or somebody, a first-tier person, or to be non-idiosyncratic, maybe you need at least two people, not just one person's mishigas, or his pet peeve, or his pet theory. You know, even a great man can sometimes have a pet theory, right? So, yeah.
Why are we even giving credence to those arguments?
Because Mitzvah Mechavel of a right.
No, the fact of right and wrong, yeah. I would think is not relevant.
To?
Isn't it a mechanism to resolve a dispute where right and wrong is really irrelevant to the issue?
Why is right and wrong?
In other words, the mechanism is whoever has the most, if it's two versus one.
Right, but I mean, on some level, we are trying.
Yeah,
we are seeking. It's not arbitrary. It's not a numbers game.
It's not arbitrary, but if someone
it's not a contest.
I'm a gadol b'Torah, and I.
No. So that's what I'm trying to explain. That even the people who think that Kimli, you know, kedas yachid or kedas yachidim, there are rules that make it reasonable. In other words, both rules have to do with the quality of the person. Rules have to do with the quantity, you know, and so on and so forth. But either way, according to the Tumim, right, the basic principle wouldn't work anyway, right? Because according to the Tumim, the miut in such a case is keman delesa, because there's a mutual exclusivity. On the other hand, if you said that the pshat, for example, what we said before a minute ago, we said that another way to read Tosis is to say that this, the Seifa is the Ikar, meaning it's a Bezdin, and therefore implicitly they can invoke Hefker Bezdin Hefker, and therefore there's no problem of Motzim Mechaber Olav Arai. And therefore we treat it, the Kamisha Eino isn't the cause, the Kamisha Eino is the effect. Right? But that you wouldn't say by Kimli, because Kimli is a pole of the Poskim. It's not a function of a Bezdin. If I say, "Oh, Moshe Feinstein, I went to I studied on the Lower East Side. He's my Rebbe, Kimli Kadasser Moshe Feinstein." Hey, you could do a lot worse, right? So, right? But that's not Hefker Bezdin Hefker.
There's another Baldover. I don't understand.
What do you mean, there's another Baldover?
He's litigating against someone.
I know,
else.
But the man, the miut person.
How could he say, I want to pass
that relationship? Kimli Kadas Yachin, if you can say it. Again, it depends on the quantity, the quality, as the other things that we said. But all I'm saying is that according to the Tumim. No, because Beisil and Beishamai is in a Mishnah. So they're not, that's quality already. There we know how we pass it. It has to be within the ballpark of a Safek of some sort. That's what I'm trying to say. That's an example of quality, as we say, Beis Shammai, B'makom Beis Hillel, in a Mishnah. I mean, we said, if the rule is that we always paskin like Beis Hillel, then you can no longer say Kimli Kadas Beis Shammai. But that's not necessarily true about Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rabbi Yashiv. Or if you have, I mean, before it is in the minority. So then it matters the numbers, it matters the stature, but what I'm saying is, according to the Tumim, it wouldn't matter anyway. Because according to the Tumim, if it's mutually exclusive, there's no miut. Right? And if there's no miut, there's no Kimli Kadas, there's no Motzim Chavel of a right. However, So there's a third approach here. And this goes A and B. So the Kunta Sveikos quotes us the name of Barami bin Chaviv. He says the pshat in Tosis is that the miyud is supposed to give in to the rov in this process. And if the miyud refuses to accede to the rov, then it's almost the hedyot equivalent, says the Mari bin Chaviv, of a Zaken Mamre. As we see from the parsha, Zaken Mamre, of course, is a member of Bezdin Agadol, and he's a Samuch, right? There are certain, you know, specific features that apply to a Zaken Mamre. This is not a case of Zaken Mamre. But what he's saying is, the flavor of Zaken Mamre, and that's a Chiddush too, this is, there's a moderate form of Zaken Mamre. And that is when you have Dayanim and they sit together, right? So there's an implicit understanding that the minority group, in the end, will sign on to the majority decision. If they refuse to do so, then it's a kind of implicit Zaken Mamre. So he says that's the pshat. That's what Tosis means when they say Shaini D'Chashiv Miyad Didru Kimi She'eino. They're obligated as part of this process to concede.
So after the fact, the decision is unanimous.
Correct. That is the view of the Marayim Kavu. So is that true in Kimberley, for example? Absolutely not. You don't even have the people in the same room. They didn't sit down together. You have Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Shach and Rav Soloveitchik and whoever we're talking about. Right? They didn't sign up together to examine a topic and you know to kind of implicitly agree, you know, to accept the majority view. Right? Oh. So Rav Chaim says something very similar, except, and I think it's a really great snapshot. You know, people always, you know, always very fascinated, like, you know, what was Rav Chaim's chiddush, you know, his derech. You know, what do we mean when we talk about conceptualization and so on? So here's a great example where, you know, Rav Chaim says basically the same idea, but not as an umdana, not as an implicit agreement, you know, and an external factor like, you know, moderate Zaken Mamre, but Rav Chaim says the idea that we've been talking about previously, and that is as follows. Rav Chaim says, when you look at a Din Torah and the role of Dayanim, there are two ways to look at it. One way is that you have three Dayanim, or whatever the number are, and the majority of those Dayanim vote a certain way, and they're decisive, and they win the case, and the minority lose the case. But that's not probably the legally, conceptually accurate way to understand what happens in a Beis Din. What really happens in a Beis Din is that there is a unit. Again, I'm elaborating it a little bit more, but that's certainly what he's saying. There is a unit. It's an integrated unit. The consensus, it engages the topic, and it produces a consensus solution. And that consensus solution, right, is attributable to the total group that engages the topic. And that's how we understood the pshat in Tosis, that the hasam gabe dayanim shaini, the chashuv miyutid hu kimi she'eino, there are no, you know, individual dayanim in the majority and individual dayanim in the minority, legally, conceptually, formally, not because they have to give in, because otherwise it's kind of implicit and it's a moderate Zaken Mamre. No, because by definition, that's what a Beis Din is. Beis Din is a unit, right, that operates on the basis of analysis and discussion and debate and vote to produce a consensus. So Lamaisa, this is the consensus of the total group. And therefore, it's Kimi She'eno. Now again, do you have that in Kimli Kadas, this one, Kadas, that one? Not at all. Because there's no consensus. There's no integrated unit. So this works very well with our whole analysis of Rebbe, right, in the Havamina of the Gemara. as well as the connection between Bezdin Nota and Akrei Rabim Lahatos. Because what do we say? That if the very fact that we say Akrei Rabim Lahatos, so now take it a step back. Meaning, how can you say Akrei Rabim Lahatos? You should be saying Ein Hochem B'Mamon Akrei Rov. What's the answer? Because the Bezdin, oh, you can't leave. Are you leaving? I'm about to get to the. Okay, so the it's basically a problem of Ein Hochem B'Mamon Akrei Rov, right? So that's the problem. So do you want me to quick to get it in, and then you can. Okay, I'll do that. So the answer is that it's. So let me just tell you Rabbi Chaim's formulation. Then I'll bring one application, and then I'll go back to the rest. But just so you can report that I, you know, was true to my commitment. So the Rabbi Chaim says our two concepts really in Rove. One is Akrei Rabim Lahatos, which means that in trying to figure out the truth or the likely truth, we go by the majority. And we acknowledge that there's a minority, disagreement, dissent, and this is a method which produces a greater likelihood of what the true law is. However, says Reb Chaim, after that, the Akrei Rabim Lahatos in a Din Torah, in a Bezdin, turns into what we call Rubo Kikulo, which means that the majority represents the consensus of the totality. So what I wanted to add before you have to run is, and we'll discuss this more next time, but then I want to go back to Bezdin Nota a little bit, is that the Mishnah later on Chaf Tes Amud Aleph is very fascinating and discusses the following idea. And this is what Judy asked me about, if I remember correctly. There are two issues, actually. One is Eini Yodea Mosif and Dayanim, which we'll get back to. But the other is as follows. If you look at the Mishnah here on Chaf Tes Amud Aleph, four lines before the bottom of the Mishnah, it's first word, Gomru Es HaDavar, right, when they had finished the Gemara Dina, Maknisa Nosana, Gadol Shibadena Mar Ish Pliniat Hazakai, Ish Pliniat Hachayev, the chief justice, you know, renders the decision and the majority decision, right? And then the Mishnah says, Uminayin, Lekashayetse, Layomar, Nimazaka, Bechaveiro, and Bechaivin. How do you know that, you know, you should start blogging or, you know, calling a press conference, you know, on the way out, say, haha, just, you know, so you should know, I'm the good guy, you know, who voted this way, they're the guys who voted that way, or vice versa. Right, you know, I meant well, but, you know, they outvoted me. So, you're not supposed to reveal, the Dayan is not supposed to reveal how he voted. So, the question is this just a Din in Hilkos Lashon Hara, and it has nothing to do with the inner mechanism of the Bezdin? Or the only reason that this is Lashon Hara is because substantively, it contradicts what the real inner workings of Bezdin is all about. So if you look at the Gemara on Lamed, Amud Aleph, which we're not going to go into detail right now, but we'll discuss it next week, the Gemara discusses about legal malpractice. Two things. Shnayim Omrim Zakai, Lamed Amud Aleph, at the two dots. So the Gemara says, Shnayim Omrim Zakai, Michtav Hechi Kasvi. How do you write this decision? It's also fascinating, right? Rav Yochanan says Zakai. You just say Zakai. Reish Lakish says Ploni uploni mezakin, Ploni uploni mechayven. Right? And Rav Lazar says Midivreyem nizdake ploni. From the consensus, Zakai emerged. So already in those three formulations, right, you have three different perspectives how to look at this, you know, mechanism. Then the Gemara goes on and says, "My benayu, ikim benayu l'shlume iu manta behadayu." And this I'm not going to go into right now, but we'll pick it up next week. Namely, what happens if they were wrong, the majority, right? And it turns out that there's a legal malpractice consequence. So does the third guy, who he voted on, he was right, right? Does he have to pay? That's interesting, right? Or even if he doesn't have to pay, do the other two pay only two-thirds at least? Or do they pay the whole amount? So we'll discuss it next week, both the language and the issue, but you can understand very well that this is, you know, the core question here. You know, who, you know, on an individual level, he did everything he could to follow the din. You can't blame him for the malpractice conclusion, but he's part of a group, the consensus of which came to a certain conclusion. So whether that actually pulls him into liability seems too harsh, or at least doesn't minimize their liability, or does, is going to be part of this particular issue. And it's also going to determine whether or not the lo seilech rachil, not publicizing, is just a matter of lashon hara, or the reason that you don't publicize is because it's really not legally and conceptually accurate. Okay, now you can go. You could stay if you want. Okay. So before we do that, I just want to go back and discuss one other. Before we go back to the Sugya of the Flamen of an Aleph, which we'll do, I guess, next week, I want to spend a couple of minutes discussing Beis Din Noter. Because we got into this originally, the Gemara originally gets into this, by discussing whether or not there is a requirement of a odd-numbered Beis Din, per se, right? And then we talked about the relationship between that required, the composition of the Beis Din, and the mechanism of decision-making in the Beis Din. Fine. So it's interesting to ask whether or not... now again, in Rabbi Yoshia, the Gemara has this discussion. Rabbi Yona's son seems quite satisfied that there's always required a Beis Din Noter, right? In Dinei Mamonis, in Dinei Nefashos, in Beis Din Agadol. So is that requirement of Beis Din Noter only in a decision-making Beis Din? Or is it an objective requirement even when decisions are not being made? Even when it's more like a Maisa Beis Din, or more consensus or collegial oriented Beis Din. Right? The more we think that this is just a function pragmatically of, you know, having the capacity to decide, you might think the Beis Din Noter is limited to decision making Beis Dins. The more you think that it's also a symbolic, you know, configuration that highlights the way that a Beis Din works, namely as an independent unit, the fact that when there are decisions you need an odd number, right, leaves its stamp on the composition, even when you don't. It's another way of saying, well, we always work as a unit. We're not three individual dayanim, we're a Beis Din. Okay. So what I want to do is just spend a couple of minutes discussing this question. So if you look at the Marmar Kamos, sorry?
What is Rabbi Yonasan's position on Shnayim Shadonu Dinei Din?
I mean, the truth is that the Gemara says it's a Machlokas Rav Avohu and Shmuel. And then the Gemara picks up on it again on Daf Hei Amud Beis and tries to apply it to other things. Presumably, Shnayim Shadonu would be Ein Dinei Din, right? Unless you say Beis Din Noter is a requirement l'chatchila, but it's not baki. That's another possibility. But certainly, we would think that likely that Beis Din Noter is ma'ake, and therefore Shmuel's halacha is not acceptable. But we'll see in a moment halachas like it. Okay, so. So look, if you look at for a moment at Tosis in Yevamos, the third entry on our Marm Kamos, there seem to be 2 days in Tosis about this question. The Gemara in Yevamos, Mishnah in Yevamos, well, the Mishnah here actually in Sanhedrin discusses, you know, what you need for chalitza, right? 3 or 5, and the Mishnah repeats that in Yevamos. Then the Gemara in Yevamos says where we get it from, and they have a limud, and then they say vein buzz and shakul mosif and aleim odechad. In other words, the Gemara applies the requirement of Beis Din Noter to chalitza. Now in chalitza, it's not obvious that we're dealing with a decision making Beis Din. Right? It's more likely that we're dealing with a Maisa Bezdin, a Bezdin that represents a certain, power. Symbolically, it's their jurisdictional presence rather than their decision-making capacity. That's Kovei and Chalitza. So why should there be a requirement of a Bezdin, which is not Shakur or a Bezdin Dov? So that's exactly what Tosas addresses. Tosas says, Hanche Gabi Chalitza, Osi Shapir, the Ein Bezdin Shakul, Mosifim Aleim. When it comes to Chalitza, it makes a lot of sense that there's no Bezdin Shakul. Mosifim Aleim Odechad. The Ika Kama Plukti Bimasnisa. Tosas basically is asking this question. What does Chalitza have to do with decision making? Therefore, why should you need an odd number? Tosas says, not so terrible, because there are all sorts of arguments, an interesting point, right, surrounding the din of Chalitza. The Bezin of Chalitza isn't making a decision, but in order to act as a certain kind of jurisdiction, right, it has to take a stand now and then on certain issues. Therefore, implicitly, right, you need a Bezdin Noteh to address those questions, even though that's not its function. But, says Tosas, if we're talking about Avalinian Smichas Par, which is also in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, right, meaning where the Bezdin, leans on the Par Helim Dover Shul Tzibur, and they make this pronouncement. So that seems, again, totally representational. And it's not so obvious, I guess, that there are even, significant halachic issues, that are controversial, that need a decision or implicit, course of action. And if that's the case, then kosher. Why do you need a Bezdin Noteh? The Tosafot says, Yeshlomar, those are scrambling around, right? When you do smicha on an animal, do you need bekol kocho or not? You have to push this as it doesn't really matter. I mean, basically the point is there are some machlokes, and the Yad Ramah in Sanhedrin, later on in the first parak, has several other issues that he tries to highlight, in smichas paral and davar, which could account for the requirement of Bezdin Note. Odei Shlomar, this is of course the other perspective, the Bechol Duchten Debinan Roy LeBezdin Ein Bezdin Shakol. Meaning, we don't need to search for implicit decision making dimensions in the Bezdin. Right? It's sufficient to say that wherever you need a Shein Bezdin, you need an odd number. Now that's what exerts a Kasuv, Bezdin Noteh, or because the fact that where there's decision making, Bezdin Noteh highlights that independence and the idea that the Batei Dinim work in an integrated fashion, in a consensus way, as a unit, as a team, rather than as a quantity of Dayanim, that is something which is true even in the Maisa Bezdin context of what a Bezdin is. That's how I would suggest that we interpret. Similarly, we have a parallel discussion about the requirement of Bezdin Noteh and why there should be such a requirement. If there, again, in Chalitza, we know there's a bit of Bezdin Noteh, and the two deos are why? Two different, very different deos. In Sugya, in Rosh Hashanah, it's not clear that there is a bit of Bezdin Noteh when it comes to Bezdin of Kiddush HaChodesh. So the Gemara says, in Rosh Hashanah, Chafayim and Beis, Seifa et Strichale, Eni Achin Nehmelai Diatmo, Sokadait Kamina, Hov Dini Mahov, Hov Tanya, Dini Mamanis Bishlosha. Since we know that Dini Mamanis is with three, Vima Yimbum Chalarabim, Dana Filu Yechidi, right? And if the Dayan is an acknowledged expert or whatever, Dana Filu Yechidi, Akanami, the Kadshe Bichidi. You might think if you can have a Dine Mamanis case Bichidi, we talked about this already in a different context, that we talked about the thing, we talked about Dayan, Mumcha, right, and Rabacha by Darbika. You might think that if you can have a Mumcha L'Rabim in Dine Mamanis B'Yechidi, maybe it can be Mekadosh HaKodesh B'Yechidi. That's very strange. But we talked about it previously. The point I was trying to make was, because we were discussing Shitas HaRambam, when you say that a single Dayan can be done Dine Mamanis if he's a Mumcha, you mean that he's a one-man walking Bezdin, like the Turfelt and the Rush and others? Or do you mean that there are two ways to accomplish Din? One is through a Bezdin, that's if you have three, and the other way is through Hora, if you have one. And that's how we interpreted the Rambam in Perek Beis, Silchos, Sanhedrin, Alacha Yud. So when the Gemara thought that if you can get away with one in Dine Mamanis, you should also be able to get away with one in Kiddush HaChodesh, clearly they were assuming that the one operates as a one-man Bezdin, because Kiddush HaKodesh has nothing to do with Hora, right? It has everything to do with a Maisa Bezdin. That's part of the Havamim. So that's what the Gemara says. Kamash Malan, and it's not so. So the Kamash Malan may be, no, in Dine Mamanis you get away with a Yachid, because it's not Midin Bezdin, it's Midin Din, right? And in Kiddush HaKodesh you need a Bezdin, you need three. So then the Gemara says, Ve'im Achanami, how do you know? So the Gemara says, Ein Lecha Mumcha L'Rabim B'Yisrael, Yoser mi Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu was the biggest Mumcha L'Rabim in history. Right, was and will be, according to the Kari Amuna. The Ka'amar Le'Kodesh Baruch Hu Ad Ika Aaron B'Hadoch. You need Aaron to it with you. The Siva Yom Hashem Moshe V'El Aaron Eretz Mitzrayim Le'Mor HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem. Ooh, that's very interesting. The impression from the Gemara is that for Kiddush HaKodesh, two brothers is all you need for Kiddush HaKodesh. Right? That true? So Tosa says, Ad Ika Aaron Bahadach, the Ein Bezdin Shakol, Mosifin Aleim, Odechad. He doesn't address the Kurva question, right? But he does address the numbers question. He says, yeah, you have two, but all you need is two because there's a Din of Bezdin, Noteh. Right? So basically, Tosus assumes that the Din of Bezdin Noteh applies to a Bezdin of Kiddush HaKodesh. Maybe. The Sugi the Haki command, I'll tell you in a second what the Amiri said. The Sugi the Haki command, Amar B'Shmaita Kamaisa, the Sanhedrin, Thar Torah Chadna Mikasher, the Sim B'Tanik Tishbar Amisecha, Midi Yitzri Chacha Ad Ikarin Bahadach, the Laman the Boy Midaraisa, Gimel Mumchin, who Kadei Lo Tinol Delos B'Fnei Lavin, the Gimel Adyotus Gabi Nisachodesh, Ein Lahach Shir, Avim Kein Lo Tzarech Kron. Okay. Either way, Tosa says that there's a Din of Bezdin Noteh. The Tashbait says there Aaron and Moshe were not the Mekadshei Sechodesh. Kurva, the fact that he addressed Moshe and Aaron shows that Moshe alone wasn't enough. So Moshe had to team up with two other people who weren't Krovim either. And how do you get that? What's the Limud? So Tashbait struggles a little bit on that. Fine. The Meiri, I had brought it, okay. The Meiri here is very fascinating. Meiri says, Mekom Akom, even if he's a mumcha, he can't be mekadosh as chodesh on his own. Afal pi shadine mamanis amr mumcha l'rabim dal afilu yichidi. Shenem chumcha yeser Moshe Rabbeinu. Yafal pikein neomar lo adika aron v'hadach. Then he adds, Afal pi sheba aron imo mia yispik lo. So that's Moshe and Aaron. Mikomako mimoshe v'yelach ein kiddush ela b'shlamsha. So, what does that even mean? Right? Kiddush HaKodesh, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe and Aaron, and then after that you needed three. So, this goes back a little bit to something we discussed earlier in the year. We were discussing the question, why does Kiddush HaKodesh, especially according to the Rambam, connected to Bezdin HaGadol? Right? And the Ramban raises the question, how could it even... Because this is a sheet of the Rambam, that it depends on Bezdin HaGadol. So the Ramban says, it's just historically, inconceivable. Because they were doing Kiddush HaKodesh when Bezdin HaGadol was no longer sitting in Lishkas HaGazis. And if they weren't sitting in Lishkas HaGazis, then they couldn't try a Zaken Mamre, meaning they didn't have the status of Bezdin HaGadol. So what are we even talking about? Well, So I mentioned at the time that the Rav, in one of his Yahrzeit Rashas, a famous piece, suggested that the function of Bezna Gadol in Kiddush HaChodesh is the representation of Klal Yisrael. And basically what he was saying was, there are two dinim of Bezna Gadol, and we know that there are even more. One is Bezna Gadol as a Bezdin, the Supreme Court that hears, the big cases, right? And as far as that is concerned, Bezin Hagad will have to be sitting Belishus Hagazis at the apex of the network of Bate Dinim. And if they weren't, then they didn't have status, and they couldn't try Zak and Mamre, and so on and so forth. However, there's another din of Bezin Hagad, and that is the status of Bezin Hagad as the representative of the interests, spiritual interests, of Klal Yisrael. Something we've talked about in a number of other contexts as well. And as far as that is concerned, that's not the formal Bezdin of Bezna Gadol, it's the group of Chachmei HaMesorah. And therefore, even if they weren't sitting in Lichas HaGazis, they contributed to Kiddush. The idea of Kiddush HaKodesh is that Klal Yisrael has to be Kaddish HaKodesh. And Klal Yisrael, that's a big referendum, right? So you are able to represent Klal Yisrael by means of, this other function of Bezna Gadol. So I thought, my suggestion, that that's the pshat in the Me'iri as well. Here he's saying, maybe even in the Habamim of the Gemara is saying, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu has been Mokom Ayin, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was the first political leader of Klal Yisrael and spiritual leader. Who better than Moshe Rabbeinu represents the interests of Klal Yisrael, right? As a unit, their spiritual interests. So, that's what the Gemara says. Well, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu alone can be Mekadosh HaSachodesh, right? And then the Gemara says, no, Ardeika Aron Bahadach. But that's good too. I mean, there are only two, so how does it help you? And they're Krovim. The answer is, the Halacha, you need three, and you need a Bezdin. And maybe you also need, Rechokim, something to discuss. But at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe and Aaron represented, right, the diverse models of the leadership of Klal Yisrael. Right, it was Keser Malchus and the Keser Kahuna. Right, so Moshe, the Aaron, the Hadach, were the total interests. Moshe Rabbeinu was Yikov the Adin the Sahar, and Aaron was, the Oif Shalom and the Rodef Shalom and the embodiment of Pshara. So the point I'm trying to make is that if Kiddush HaChodesh is about representing, the totality of Klal Yisrael, so you can understand that, maybe Moshe and Aaron, that, dynamic duo, constitute an exception to the normal requirement of three regular dayan. Okay, so that's Kiddush HaChodesh. Now let's discuss another issue. The what?
Miriam, me, he's Skiwa.
Yeah.
To make him to the Torah. Or it says, Moshe Zaru.
Right.
Aaron Koro. So everybody asks the question, why not? Moshe was a God of Jerusalem to Miriam.
Right.
Why is he the Zaru?
I hear. Okay.
Then the church in the Scrubs of Rebbe.
Who does?
The Scrubs of Rebbe.
Uh-huh. What does he say?
He says that Walker Gershon's connection to function all of them. Didn't apply at the time of Mar-Rao.
Yeah, we've discussed that.
Based on the Mar-Rao and the famous Mar-Rao, because there was a Kabbalah Bikriya, so therefore there wasn't the Gershon Sky, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was on top of the heart, so even the Kabbalah gave us for Rotzel, not Ardei Kriya.
That's complicated. Okay, interesting. Very interesting. Okay, so, So look at the Ritva and Rosh Hashanah. The Ritva and Rosh Hashanah says the following. Before we get to that, go to the next one. Number 9, Hamad Avim Sechem Megillah Chaf Gimel Amid Beis. And really, it's a Mishnah again in Sanhedrin, on Beis Amid Aleph. HaKarkaos Tisha V'Kohen, the Adam Kiyotze Bahem. In the assessment of Kachim, Karka, let's say, So you need 10 people, 9 in a Kohen. And similar with Adam. Gemara says, Miran Emili, Amar Shmuel Asara Kohanim Ksuva B'Parsha. Chad L'Gufei, V'Ida Chava Miyut Achar Miyut, Vei Miyut Achar Miyut El Rabos, Tishri Yisraelim V'Chad Kohen. Okay, so that's the Gemara, that there are 10 people. So you, the question is as follows, how come when it comes to this kind of a Bezdin, you don't need an odd number? So is the pshat that it's really 9 and 1? 9 Israel and a Kohen? Maybe. But the Rishonim were very bothered by this. Oh. So if you look back now, the Ritva says, Kamele HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Adika Achrina Bahadach, Pirush Dechsiv, HaChodesh, Hazeh Lachem, Eidu Zu Tehei Mesura Lachem, Ve'ein Bezen Shako, Mosifin Aleyem Od Echad. Good. That's the Gemara. I mean, Gemara said what it says, and he's so far quoting like Tosis that the din of Bezenota applies to Kiddush HaChodesh. So the Ritva says, V'kasha, kashali, adithamit b'megillah, karkaos tisha v'kohen, u'maisinala b'gemara mishum de asara kohanim k'siva b'parsha, ha'amai lo'amina de'kulu chadsar de'ein bezen shakum v'asifan aleim v'odachon. Why don't you say there should be 11? Because you have 10, and then you need an odd number. Right? Ubetosvis helua bekushya. And it's true. If you look at Tosvis and Megillah and Tosvis and Erchin, they don't really answer. They say this is a good question. The Yesh Rabba Seinu Mitarzim, Shani Hossam, Kibin de Nachas, Kra, Limimni, Asara Kohanim, Belamani Yoser, Devadai Minyana Dafgo. That since the Torah is very specific about the numbers, so we don't assume that it's an approximate number that's adjusted by the rule of Bezenota, Mosif and Aleim Odecha. L'odomil hodahacha, unlike other cases, D'apagav t'ksiva yomar Hashem Moshe v'yal Aaron, v'lo chashuv prata kulahai d'neima d'nichtov shlishi, right? Shadibar Moshe v'yaron bilvad, Moshe and Aaron were very prominent. So it's not spelling out how many people you need technically for the act of Kiddush HaChodesh. It's just saying, you know, the conversation was with Moshe v'Aaron, and figure out, you know, who you have to get somebody else to join with them. Bein shemokom lichtov shlishi. Hilkach samach hakasuv ala dibur adavar hayadua shein bezen shok. It makes sense that they're focusing on the main protagonists, and then you kick in the rule of the bezdin ein bezen shok. Aval hasam the nachaskra liminyana limni chadsar alavada minyana dafkahu. But there, they're putting so much effort into counting out 10. It's, you know, what's the point of that? So if you really mean the meant 11, then mention 11. Yashmina the kimin the shuma bi almahi. But then he tries to explain. Okay, fine. That's the phenomenon. That's how we know it is so. Right. Still raises an interesting question. Why should it be so? Why shouldn't the regular rule apply? Dashmina the kivin the shuma bi alma he mistayin basara kohanim ladaktek b'shumaso v'lo bi'inan dezen shakol. Since it's just a shuma, not a decision, but an assessment, interesting, it's enough with 10. You don't need a bezen shakol. You're going to, with 10 people, you'll come to the right conclusion. The Rajba says it a little bit differently, and the, you know what? I'm going to have to stop. So the Rajba and the Ritva and Megillah say it a little bit differently. I'm going to read them next time. But let me leave you with the following idea, and then we'll also follow up in one or two more cases. They say in the name of the Beis HaLevi, they say Levi thought this was not a good question, or that the Rishonim's answers here maybe should have been in an opposite direction. He pointed out the following. Normally, we're dealing with a situation where you have two, you know, basic responses, right? You could say chayiv, and you could say potter. You could say makudash, you could say ena makudash. You could say, you could decide that the chalitza is chal, or the smicha sapar is chal, yes or no. So then it's helpful to have an odd number so you can be decisive. But, says the Beis HaLevi, when it comes to a shuma, who says that you're choosing between two options? Right? In theory, you could be choosing between 3 options, or 10 options, or 5 options. So if you're interested in building in right, decisiveness, you don't necessarily do that by an odd number. Because they're not voting, you know, two options. Okay. So we'll see whether that's what maybe some of the Rishonim meant or not, and then another couple of cases, and then we'll go back to Daf Lamed Amud Aleph, the question of Rechilos and malpractice, and then we'll talk about Eni Odeya as well.